Bauer versus Quest, I guess. Mr. Hara?
May it please the court. The district court held that my clients, the Sussman Group, are bound to this contract, the agreement to arbitrate dated July 6, 2012. This court should reverse for one simple reason. My clients never agreed to this contract. They did agree in principle to a mediator's proposal to divide the attorney's fees in dispute in this matter between the three parties, the Sussman Group and the appellees, the 48 Firm Group and Bill Gottfried. And they agreed that they needed a final written agreement for the party's signatures that would be documented in a mutually agreeable fashion.
What is Sussman's problem with the arbitration? I never understood that. What does he have against arbitration?
There are at least five highly material terms in this contract that were not part of the mediator's proposal that he's complaining about.
I know that. I'm asking you, what is it that he doesn't like about these terms?
He feels that a small group that made a large contribution to the case going up against a huge group of hundreds of attorneys that each made smaller contributions puts him in a weaker bargaining position.
Wait, I don't understand. He accepts the 4.5%, right?
Correct.
Okay, so that's his fee. Now, what is it, with the terms of the arbitration, they're procedural terms. Why is he bothered by those procedural terms, given that he has his fee? Is he afraid the arbitration is going to take the fee away from him, or what?
The agreement empowers the arbitrators and says that each party agrees that the arbitrators have the power to forfeit any party's fee if they find a failure to cooperate. It doesn't say what a failure to cooperate is, what the standards for that are. In fact, it says that in making those decisions...
Well, I don't understand. What cooperation would be required of Sussman, given that he's been... the mediator said he could have 4.5%. Why would he not want to cooperate? I don't understand.
No matter whether he would want to cooperate, Your Honor, he would if he had entered into the contract voluntarily. He would want to cooperate. It's a matter of other parties coming to the arbitrators and saying, Sussman hasn't cooperated on this ground, he hasn't cooperated on this ground. And who knows what the standards are going to be there. The arbitrators can employ whatever rules they want in those proceedings.
49, I think... counting Gottfried, there are 49 other firms involved, and they're all happy with this. What is his gripe? I don't understand it. Does this have to do with his fight with Gottfried?
That is definitely a part of it, Your Honor, because Sussman and Gottfried, Mr. Sussman alleges, were partners for 13 years on this case and other cases. Mr. Gottfried has split off. They have differences. They have more than one dispute.
If he's content with his 4.5%, what is the significance of his squabble with Gottfried?
Because his squabble with Gottfried, his fight with Gottfried, is over the 13% in total that was awarded to Gottfried.
But he accepted the 4.5%. What does he care whether another 8.5% goes to Gottfried or goes to someone else?
They have other disputes that are not before this court and are not part of the record. Gottfried asserts that those other disputes are wrapped up.
What do they have to do with this case?
Because Gottfried asserts that they are wrapped up within the agreement to arbitrate in the fiber optic litigation. For example,
is Gottfried trying to take some of Sussman's 4.5% away from him?
No, not directly, Your Honor, but there are other outstanding obligations.
What about indirectly?
If Gottfried owes money Sussman in an unrelated issue, for example, which, again, it's not in the record, but he does, he's going to assert that that debt is within the scope of the agreement to arbitrate and that it's already been decided.
What do you mean?
Gottfried is going to argue that it's already been decided by the arbitrators in making the division of fees, the 4.5 and the 8.
But the arbitrators didn't make the division of fees. That's the mediators.
Well, Gottfried says that it's pursuant to the arbitration agreement that everyone is bound by, Sussman says, yes, it was the mediator split. And they are the same people, so it gets a little confusing. They're Eric Green and Jim Wilson. In their role as mediators, they made this proposal to everyone. The agreement that was supposed to memorialize that turns them into arbitrators with the power to make binding decisions.
So you're saying he's afraid the arbitrators will take away some of his 4.5%?
One concern is that the arbitrator...
Now, answer me yes or no. Is that what he's concerned about? Or that a concern, that they may take away some of his 4.5%?
Yes, that's possible. Yes. The 48 firm group has already threatened to try to take away part of his fees before the district court if he was successful in defending his rights and got an order holding that he was not bound to the agreement. They were going to try to punish him that way. They very well might try to do
it with
the arbitrators.
That's understandable, of course.
I'm in my rebuttal time, Your Honor. I'll reserve.
Okay. Thank you.
Gottfried, sir.
Mr. Gottfried, yeah. A principal.
Yes. The enviable spot of defending myself. Thank you very much, Judge Posner, Judge Bauer, Judge Sykes. I have sitting with me at the table Mr. Ken Kniff, who represented me in a district court proceedings. A point of clarification. The money that is being distributed to the parties, including Mr. Sussman, who's already received money out of at least 8 states, are monies that are calculated based upon the arbitration agreement, not the mediator's proposal. Between the time of our acceptance of the mediator's proposal and the reducing the writing of the final terms, there were changes not only in the lacework of the agreement, but in the substantive percentages to account for example, the distribution previously made in the state of Idaho to deal with the arbitration regarding Mr. Littman, and a negotiation of a collar on that arbitration, and then a subsequent claim that popped up from the estate of a dead lawyer who had been working on the case. So the numbers that we're all taking are numbers based upon the arbitration agreement, and he's been taking his direct benefits out of it. He's been participating in the creation of those terms.
You mean the 4.5% is in the arbitration agreement?
No, it's actually less in the arbitration agreement. All the figures there for the 3 major groups are less because we're accommodating other people who came in.
Okay, but there is a figure. Saying there's a figure in the arbitration
agreement. Yes, and on page 4, I believe, the arbitration agreement shows the adjustments. And all those things happen to create the final set of figures that we're all working off of.
Okay, so, but even if Sussman is being the dog in the manger, whatever it is, in this business, don't you have to, so you have a kind of promissory estoppel argument, don't you?
Inequitable estoppel.
Yeah, or equitable estoppel. But what is the prejudice? That is, if he refused to sign the arbitration agreement, then the arbitration agreement doesn't bind the other parties. Is that right?
Well, it is a multilateral contract. I'm not sure what happens to the effectiveness inter se if 48 and me, for example, does not mean I'm giving up claims to assert for a larger share that I gave up to sign a global peace agreement. I'm not quite sure how that all works out.
So is the notion that if he is not bound by the arbitration agreement, he's going to bring a lawsuit? Is that the idea?
That's what his promise was.
Against the other lawyers like you.
I know certainly I've got a target on my back. I don't know about the others. But it leaves me in a spot of being only a victim, having agreed to peace, which I haven't gotten yet. And I just wanted to clear up another question about the prejudice. Mr. Sussman seems to think we just tear up the agreement and start again. I don't know how the court feels about it, but we've got 28, maybe more by this point, court orders passing out millions of dollars to 50 lawyers around the country. I'm not sure how we reboot that effectively. We can try awfully hard, but it's not like putting everything back into the broken egg. It's a lot of things that have happened. A lot of impractical arguments being made and tried and abandoned in district court and tried and abandoned in the briefs here. I mean, ultimately, the answer is the arbitrators will decide what's arbitrable once the threshold question of whether or not Mr. Sussman is bound to arbitrate is resolved here. And I and the other 48 firms are prepared to go there. The only reason we haven't is the arbitrators have declined to do what might be an advisory arbitration. So they're waiting for a signal that they have jurisdiction to take on and decide any arbitral issues, and that's where we are. That's all I have to say.
The notion that if Sussman is not bound by the arbitration agreement, the arbitrators would feel that their decisions would have no finality because
yes.
he might get more in litigation and he'd have to figure out how that was split among.
It would be an expensive, difficult, problematic process of trying to unwind everything, I think.
There was a period of about a week or so after the final written agreement was circulated among the parties where nothing was heard from Mr. Sussman, as I understand it. And then when he did weigh in, it was not with an objection to the arbitration provisions in the agreement.
No, you're right, Your Honor. He didn't actually voice any objection to any part of the agreement or indicate that he had any objection until the 17th, over 2 weeks later. And then in a periodic succession of emails involving lawyers and mediators and special masters, it finally came out that he was basically dissatisfied because he wasn't being paid all his lodestar. Well, none of us were. So.
But, of course, the general contract rule is that silence is not a does not bind you to a contract. You can't send a person a stuffed animal or something and say that if you don't return this within a week, you've bought it, right?
That's subject to two exceptions, if I may. Subject to two exceptions, when based upon the course of dealings of the party, when the other parties are being led down the position of detriment or being misled. The second is based upon the relationship, if there is, between the contracting parties. Like, for example, the assertion of a partnership, of which there's no evidence in the record, of which there was none. But if there was a partnership, or as he describes it elsewhere, as a joint venture, then he has to speak up, or else he's prejudicing other people. So in those situations, there is a duty to speak. And I think he had it here.
So you're treating the 50 firms as a kind of community of some sort, where being a member of the community requires dealings in good faith, in the sense of warning people that you're not happy with this, and rather than breaking up at the last minute. Is that?
Well, we have to do this 46 times. We can't run the risk of a running gun battle, have somebody take their money from one state and use it to fund litigation to get more in another state. We're not really settling anything, and the idea was to have global peace. So it did require a community of interest, and it required global peace.
Well, and this idea of global peace, as you're terming it, included discussions about an alternative dispute resolution mechanism?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part.
It's my understanding that in the negotiations that preceded the agreement, which then was reduced to writing, there were some discussions about alternative dispute resolution in order to buy this global or put in place a global peace agreement, as you're referring to it here.
There were many efforts over years. You know, remember, this litigation went over 13 years in various places, including this court, twice. And so there were many efforts to try to find a formulation that everybody could work together cooperatively, because the MDL panel twice refused to consolidate. So we were all over the place with different people doing different things in an uncoordinated fashion, quite frankly. And in the most immediate process coming up to the mediator's proposal, there were various attempts to try to get agreements on how we were going to mediate, who was going to do it. Would we bring in Judge Anderson as a special master now? Would we go right to arbitration? Would we go to mediation and so forth? So there are many variants that were discussed and tried. And ultimately, with Judge Pallmeyer's direction, we started with mediation with Professor Green and Mr. Wilson, and then we went to Wayne Anderson. But fortunately, the combination came up with the resolution, which it was clear from the point of negotiation was going to be a three-way among the major groups. So there's not a whole lot of surprises about what we were trying to do.
Right. that's what my question goes to, whether this course of conduct exception to the silence rule is in play here, because everybody knew that this was a major piece of the puzzle.
Absolutely. I think it was clear from the declarations everybody filed and testimony before Judge Pallmeyer that peace, getting rid of all this, not having any appeals, not having any more fights in any other district courts was key. Because everybody thought, as all plaintiffs' lawyers do, they thought they deserved a bigger piece of the pie. But one of the considerations is, all right, how are you going to get it? How long is it going to take? And what your risks are? Can we just resolve this and move on? And we did. We thought. So, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Gottfried. Yeah. Mr. Harrer?
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor. Judge Sykes, I would like to point out there's nothing in the record, at least no one's argued it in the briefs, that there was a discussion about arbitration leading up to the mediator's proposal. The mediator's proposal doesn't say anything about arbitration. 2 days after everyone had accepted, there was a conference call between all the parties and the mediators during which it was decided that the 48 firm group would draft the final document memorializing the deal. No discussion of arbitration. No discussion of forfeiture of your fees, of holding of indemnifying the other attorneys for their attorney's fees, for any of the other material provisions that are in this agreement. It just wasn't discussed. The first time Mr. Sussman saw it was on July 2nd in the draft that the 48 firm group proposed. Regarding...
Well, there was an exchange of emails, was there not, during the course of this process, referencing some form of alternative dispute resolution for future issues?
There's an email after the mediator's proposal was accepted on June 27th where one of the arbitrators says that there should be an arbitration provision in there, Jim Wilson.
I thought it happened earlier in the process in the middle of June.
Nothing that I'm aware of leading up to the mediator's proposal, no.
An email from Kathleen Kaufman?
I'm not familiar with
an email from Andrew Cohen.
That's after the mediator's proposal was agreed to, right? The 48 firm group went to work. Let's draft the document. Ms. Kaufman said to her co-counsel, we need an arbitration provision in there. That's not an email to Mr. Sussman or anyone on his side. It's not even to Mr. Gottfried. It's in-house between the 48 firm group attorneys saying we want an arbitration provision in there because it's important to us.
Okay.
Usually
so
when a party has
not
a
everybody
term,
is copied on that?
No. And
when did Sussman discover that there was an arbitration agreement, whether arbitration was being discussed?
On July 2nd, when the draft was sent to him. And it's not just an arbitration, by the way, provision, by the way, that disputes will be arbitrated. There's all these ancillary terms that he has to pay the other parties' attorney's fees if they have to go to court to enforce the arbitration provision. He has to indemnify the other parties from claims of local counsel who might think they have a claim to the total fee that's being awarded. The arbitrators can declare his fees forfeited or any party's fees forfeited if they find a failure to cooperate. Maybe those terms are a good idea. Maybe they're a bad idea. I'm not here to second-guess those decisions that my clients made. But you can't say they're not material. I mean, they're highly important. They're the sorts of things that you would want to know before you agree to a contract. And Mr. Sussman and his partners, Charles Watkins and John Wiley, they simply did not agree to this contract.
That's what the brief never explains. What is special about Sussman's position that he is one of 50 who won't go along with the arbitration?
I'm not here to second-guess my client's business decisions. They're free to make bad decisions and good decisions. Frankly, it's not Judge Pallmeyer's role to second-guess their decisions either. They can make a bad decision. Maybe they'll look back in time and say, maybe we should have agreed to that agreement to arbitrate. Maybe we should have done that.
Has he agreed to other arbitration agreements?
Never. Historically, when Gottfried was part of, we call him part of the Sussman group, he disputes that, but at least they were co-counsel. Sussman and Gottfried always refused to engage in arbitration with the 48 firm group, much to their consternation. The 48 firm group agreed in 2006 that they would arbitrate all their attorney fee disputes. Gottfried and Sussman said no. At the end, Gottfried saw an opportunity to get his own better deal. He took it on his own, and he left the Sussman group, and they have differences between them now that obviously aren't before the court. The only issue here is whether a contract was formed. But that gives you some history to show that arbitration was hotly contested, whether the parties would agree to it or not. And you couldn't just presume that Sussman changed his mind and exhibited that change of mind by saying nothing. Mm-hmm. My time's expired.
Okay, well, thank you very much, counsel.